Welcome to the Steadyhand Podcast. I'm Scott Ronalds, joined today with Tom Bradley. In today's session, we're going to discuss 2011. Now, it was certainly an interesting year in the capital markets, as they all seem to be these years. Tom, before we dig into the details, do you just want to provide us with some general comments?
Well, normally, Scott, I'd fill our listeners in with some details on how the company's doing, but I'm going to go light on that this time because some of you will know we're heading up towards our fifth anniversary about the time of our next quarterly podcast, and so we'll have more to say at that time. But I did want to just point out that we've had some great recognition in the last quarter. In October, Morningstar updated their stewardship rankings, and we again came out with a top grade. For those of you who aren't familiar with this, Morningstar is a global research team, and they do a very rigorous analysis of, I think it's 27 or 28 mutual fund firms in Canada, really to assess how well the interests of the firms are lined up with the interests of the clients. And on that measure, we came up with the top grade. So we're really delighted with that. It confirms, I think, some of what we think are important business practices at Steadyhand. Later in the quarter, in December, at the Canadian Investment Awards, we received the Stewardship Award, which was a little more narrow in its scope. It was focused on a report we published last January on helping clients assess investment performance. You know, the report provided a framework for investors to use to do that, and it was acknowledged for its quality and also the educational initiative that we took, because this is something that had not been done previously in the industry. I should note, for those of you who have an interest in that report, that version 2.0 will come out in late January with revised numbers to the end of last year and some refinements. But I think for this point, Scotty, that's about enough talking about us. Let's get into what people really want to hear about, which is the markets and the funds.
Well, stocks had a tough year, generally speaking. Most of the major markets were down, with Europe, Japan, and many of the Asian markets posting double-digit declines. Canada was down roughly 9%, while the U.S. was actually the only major developed market to gain ground, and it was up 2%, or about 4% in Canadian dollar terms. The bond market, on the other hand, had another remarkable year, given the low interest rate environment that we're dealing with. 10-year Government of Canada yields dropped from about 3.5% early in the year to under 2% by December, and this is a huge drop, again, given where we stand in this interest rate environment. The DEX Universe Bond Index, which is the major gauge of the Canadian market, was up about 10% in the year, and overall, our clients with a balanced asset mix saw their portfolio gain anywhere from 2 to 5%, which was a pretty good showing, all things considered, as you'll see in the comments coming up. So Tom, with that as background, let's dig into the individual funds. I'm going to start off here with the income fund. As mentioned, the bond market was up nearly 10%. This was driven in large part by government bonds, federal and provincials, which were really the stars of the year, although corporates also performed well. The fund itself had another strong year. It gained 7.2%, and it's had a terrific run since the end of 2008, over which time it's returned over 13% per year on average. Now, it did slightly lag the bond market in 2011, due primarily to its greater exposure to corporates. Now, as for specific details, the spread or difference in yield between government and corporate bonds is currently sitting at 1.7% for 5-year bonds, and this is an above average gap. The manager of the fund, Connor Clark and Lund, believes that the spread will narrow as the global economy gains some traction, and they continue to favor corporate bonds over governments. The fund initiated a position in U.S. high-yield bonds in the fall, as yields on these securities moved close to 10%. And these investments make up about 9% of the portfolio, and CC&L feels they're going to be a big area of opportunity going forward. The portfolio's equity investments performed well, gaining 8% in aggregate. When you compare that to the 9% decline in the broad market, it was really a standout year for the equities. REITs were amongst the top performers. As a group, they gained over 20%. And the manager's focus on dividend growers and avoidance of the mining sector were the key reasons why the equity component of the fund fared much better than that broad Canadian market. As a group, the income equities in the fund have a yield close to 5%. Some of the top performers in 2011 were TELUS, Brookfield Infrastructure Partners, Algonquin Power and Utilities, and Canadian Apartment Properties REIT. Well, CCNL's longer-term perspective hasn't changed. They feel that interest rates are too low and corporate bond spreads too high, and they will look for opportunities to further shorten the duration of the portfolio and or add to credit exposure, but they want to be cautious in doing so until they see some material signs of improvement in Europe or a repair of business confidence. Tom, any other further comments on the income fund?
Well, Scott, I'm in agreement with Connor, Clark, and Len in the sense that I think interest rates are artificially low, and when we get some stability in the world, we'll start to see them move back up, maybe even a couple of percentage points. So I think the caution that our manager here is showing is also reflected in how we have been advising our clients on asset mix, and we'll talk about that in just a few minutes. But let's move on to the equity side, and I'll start with the equity fund. You know, this was a year that the TSX was down, as you said, Scott, dropping just a little under 9%, which was driven by weakness in commodity stocks. You know, the mining sector lost over 25% in the year, and oil and gas stocks were weak as well. The foreign markets were also down overall, but not nearly as much. The global index was down a little less than 4%, and a big component of that, the U.S., was actually up, as Scott said. Now, the fund performed much better than those overall markets. It was down just a tiny bit, 1.3%. And it has less exposure to cyclical businesses and a greater focus on higher quality companies that have more predictable revenues. And most of you know this non-cyclical, high-quality strategy held back returns in 2009 and part of 2010. But CGOV stuck to their conviction, and it's really paid off for clients over the last 18 months or so. Now, foreign stocks played a big role in the portfolio this year. A number of the holdings turned in strong gains. You know, some of the consumer-focused companies like CVS, the drugstore company, Unilever, and Asia-Pacific Breweries. These stocks had been a drag on performance in past years when the Canadian dollar was rising, but they proved their value in 2011. The technology stocks were an area that was a drag on the portfolio. You know, one of the prominent names that we've talked about in these podcasts many times was RIM in particular, but also Cisco had a tough year before it was sold. Both of those held back returns, and both of those are now out of the portfolio. Manulife was another one of our problem children, and we really lost faith that they were going to be able to achieve the results that we'd hoped for, and so it was sold late in the year as well. So as much as we had an excellent year, it wasn't all glory. We had our warts as well in the equity fund. As we've previously pointed out, dividends remain a big theme in this fund. All but four of the fund's dividend payers increased their payout last year, which is remarkable. CGOV likes companies with a history of growing dividends, not necessarily the highest dividend yields, but these are companies that comprise a large portion of the portfolio. Now, as you know, CGOV doesn't generally trade very much, but over the course of this year, they were more active than usual, and, you know, not surprising given the kinds of markets we've had. But there were five new companies added to the fund and six removed over the course of the year, and a lot of that activity came when the markets were quite volatile, especially in the summer. Now, as we look forward, the themes in this fund aren't going to change very much, but clearly the pullback in more economically sensitive stocks, including the cyclicals, has CGOV pouring over those type of stocks. And you may see some high-quality cyclicals, mining companies perhaps, creep into the portfolio as we go forward in the months ahead. Scott, how about the Global Fund?
Well, as most investors will know, anything Europe-related was punished last year, as the sovereign debt issues weighed heavily on the market. Asian stocks were also hit pretty hard, and with three-quarters of its investments in these two regions, the Global Fund had a tough year. It dropped 7.5%. It was helped somewhat, however, by a weaker Canadian dollar, which did fall against the yen and the U.S. dollar. There were three key issues that impacted performance this year. Number one, its light weighting in U.S. stocks, which was one of the few markets to gain ground in 2011, About 20% of the portfolio is invested in U.S. securities, whereas they comprise about 50% of the world market. Number two, Japan. About 20% of the fund is invested in Japanese companies with a focus on export-oriented businesses. These include companies such as Sony and Panasonic. And these firms were negatively impacted by the earthquake, of course, in the spring, and they're still being hurt by the strength of the yen. And number three, financial stocks. The banks and insurance companies comprised a relatively small portion of the portfolio in 2011, but the ones we did hold were generally hit pretty hard. Companies such as Bank of America, Intesa, Royal Bank of Scotland, and Mizuho all suffered big price declines. And the manager of the fund, Edinburgh Partners, sold three banks during the year due to balance sheet concerns and deteriorating outlooks. There were some positives to report. Consumer-related stocks and healthcare stocks performed quite well, similar to the equity fund, as Tom just mentioned. Some of these holdings include Unilever, Bridgestone, GlaxoSmithKline, and Diageo. The fund has had a pronounced value bias for some time now, meaning its focus is on undervalued stocks with low price-to-earnings ratios, low price-to-book value ratios, and typically higher dividends. Now, this has pointed the fund more towards Europe and Japan and less towards the U.S. over the past year. And Edinburgh Partners feels that these securities are being overlooked and they should have plenty of upside potential once the clouds over the debt crisis clear up. Tom, over to you for the small cap fund.
Well, Scott, the small cap market was one of the harder hit areas of the equity markets. And in Canada, it was down 14%, due largely to the weakness in mining and energy-related stocks, which make up a big part of the small cap world. You know, our fund, on the other hand, was up 13%, and its strong performance came as a result of a few key factors. It had only modest exposure to mining. Its energy holdings performed well, and unusually so, really. Coastal Energy was up more than a double. Total Energy Services, Pacific Rubialis, while we owned it, it was subsequently sold, and Parkland Fuel all contributed to performance, so that was good. And we just had a number of our larger positions that turned in strong results and had good price gains. Canadian Helicopters, which has typically been one of our larger holdings, Alaris Royalty, and Hibbett Sports were all good stocks for the fund. Not to say there wasn't a few disappointments. One of the stocks we've owned since we started the fund in 07, Easy Home, has really struggled for several quarters and was sold. And since then, there's been some news about the board resigning, etc. So we got out of that one. Evertz Technologies and Glacier Media were also weak performers, but were not sold. Indeed, Will Witherich, the manager, added a little bit to those because their fundamentals still remain very strong, and he feels they're undervalued. Will still feels good about valuations. You know, the fund's holdings continue to turn in strong financial results. The companies have been generating strong cash flows and, in many instances, paying high dividends. Examples of that would be Canadian Helicopters, Medical Facilities, and Calian Technologies. Now, with just 15 holdings, the portfolio remains highly concentrated, yet it's more broadly diversified than many of the resource-heavy small-cap funds out there and the small-cap market overall. This positioning paid off in 2011, and has been a very successful strategy for Will over the past decade. Scott, that covers a review of the four funds that we wanted to talk about today, but let's just pull it together to finish up this podcast. As you said earlier, you know, our clients really fared pretty well in 2011. The balanced clients were up between 2 and 5%, and I think even more encouraging for us was how our client base in general reacted to the volatility in the market. We didn't see any redemptions on the weak periods that we had, and indeed we saw some people doing some very constructive rebalancing. And over time, that's going to lead to higher overall returns for our clients. You know, our longer-term results, for those of you who aren't aware, and we're just a quarter away from five-year results, but our long-term results so far for our balanced portfolios have been very good. We sit solidly in the first quartile compared to other wealth management firms. As for asset mix, many of you know we've been a little more active in making recommendations in 2011, but we haven't changed anything in recent months. We're still certainly on full alert with all that's going on in the markets, but There's a few features to our recommendations here. We really think that investors should be at a minimum level in bonds for what their portfolio plan calls for. We just think rates, as I said earlier, are artificially low, and they may stay there for a while. We just don't know, but I'm certainly uneasy sitting in too much, having too much money invested in assets that I think are overvalued, and I certainly think that about bonds. In lieu of owning some bonds, we think having some cash in the portfolio, maybe 5 to 10%, makes sense. I know it's not earning much, but it's a good defensive measure and gives you as an investor some ammunition if markets do go down. As far as equities go, yes, we see all of the uncertainty out there, but we also see valuations being very reasonable, and Scott talked about that particularly in the context of the global arena. Dividends are very attractive, and the spread between bond yields and what we call earnings yield, which is the flip side of a price-earnings ratio, has never been wider in the time I've been in the business. So we do think over the next 3, 4, 5 years that equities will do substantially better than bonds. And so we want to see our clients at least fully allocated to equities, if not a little bit more than their normal level. Now, Scott, in wrapping up, I know there's something you want our clients to all know about.
Well, Tom, we just want to remind everyone again of our client presentations that are coming up in a few weeks. We've discussed some strategy and specifics in this podcast, but we encourage everyone to come out to the event, which is being held in 5 cities starting at the end of the month and running into mid-February, where we'll review our positioning in more detail and open up the floor to any questions. So we hope to see you all there. Thanks for listening to this podcast. We'll report back to you next quarter.